Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome everybody to Season 5, Episode number 5 of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin, and here with me in the Cinematica studio, we've got the full team back together. Last week, it was me by myself with my mate Darren on the Skype. But now we've got all of you here, and it's a pleasure to see you all. How are you doing?
It's a pleasure to be back. I'm pumped, man. Pumped.
You are. You are full of the joys of caramel slice.
I am. I've got a sugar rush going that just won't stop. Puffed with caffeine as well.
And Kaylee, perhaps you should have had a caramel slice too.
No, a little bit. I can't quite do the caramel slice.
Miss Yawnies?
A bit too intense.
You're not ready.
No, too much sugar. You know, there's just not enough insulin in the world.
Fair enough.
Too. Well, look, it's good to have you all back. In today's show, novelist Cormac McCarthy teams up with Ridley Scott to make a conundrum called The Counselor. Lee Daniels' The Butler is a Black History lesson set in the White House, and we visit Kashmir to see the Valley of Saints. But first, what is in the mailbag?
So many things. Let's see. Fred Thompson sent us a tweet, his two-word review of The Butler. Bit preachy, which is what I was going to use today for a different film, so I won't now. wonderful performances from the leads, although found it a tad long and drawn out. So we'll be talking about that shortly. And also their two-word review for The Counselor, over-stylized, beautiful to watch, but ruined by bits of over-the-top prose and Cameron Diaz. Also, we'll talk about shortly.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. Boy, oh boy, are we going to get to that.
Reese Pie tweeted, finally in the Cinematica cast for Gravity is finally in the UK. Two-word review, holy cow. They saw it in 3D IMAX. That would be intense.
That would be holy cowish, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I was thinking of going to watch it at the 3D IMAX in Sydney when I was there. I was like, I don't know if I can do it.
Spin.
My eyeballs might just fall out. And Dan, you did some meet and greets this week with Buckle 22, also known as Andrew Buckle, and Sam McCosh, both from who are currently in Sydney.
No, they're currently in the South Island, actually.
Well,
but yes, they're resident in Sydney, and it's Andrew's first trip to New Zealand, so he's getting the full tour. It was really good catching up with them in Newtown the other day, and learning a bit about the Sydney scene from them, particularly in terms of their reviewers and the support that's given to bloggers and online movie reviewers from the distributors, which
access
we don't
to talent?
Access to yeah. Well, access to films, certainly there's a lot of support. The online film reviewing community in Sydney certainly is treated with a lot of respect, and they seem to get a lot of access, certainly for quite often long lead time in advance screenings as well. So yeah, it's interesting, and also apparently the industry as a whole appears to be in pretty good health over there. Box office wise, things are holding up pretty well, and certainly there's still a lot of planned expansion and in reality expansion going on around the industry in Australia. So it was good talking to them. And I know that they paid a visit to one of Wellington, the jewels in Wellington's Cinema Crown yesterday. They went to the Lighthouse Cinema in Cuba.
Did
which
they?
Yes, and they were extremely complimentary about it. Perhaps not to the extent of giving it a prize, which has also happened recently.
Oh yes, it has. That's right.
Oh right.
How can I? How much more of a softball can I?
What a good effort! I was like mesmerised by your dark, deep eyes. I was just staring at you, like, what's going on here? Yeah, no. That's right. We won. Lighthouse Cuba won, Wellington Commercial Building of the Year. So, and the Architecture Awards. So they were held late last week, and it was a bit of fun. I went along and hung out with all these hipster architects and received an award for the building that we built there. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yep, fantastic. Well done. And it just shows that there's still plenty of development, plenty of life in the theatrical side of the
business. And good design and cinema does go hand in hand.
It does, yeah.
and taste.
So
taste. It doesn't taste have. It doesn't have to be about garish carpets and funny coloured waistcoats and bow ties
and dim lights. And carpet stains.
Yes, exactly. All right, so what have people been going to see? I don't think there's going to be too many surprises on our top five.
Maxwell Silverhammer?
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
Have you?
No, but a friend of mine said it was like mind-blowing.
Yeah, no, I would say that it's sub-mind-blowing. But it's, you know, we talked about it at some length, Darren and I, on the show last week. So I think we've pretty much summed that up. Is it still number one?
I'll get there. Opening at number five.
I can't take the tension.
Opening at number five, The Counselor. Number four, down from three, Gravity. And three, down from two, Captain Phillips. Opening in the number two position is The Butler. And still in number one, Thor. 2 weeks.
And where's the turning in there, in the top 20?
Yes, it's at number 15.
Yeah, okay. Good.
Yes.
Okay, so that's Tim Winton's The Turning, which we also talked about last week on the show. And are there any plans, do you know, for that to go wider as a release? Because I know that the original plan for it was that it would be very limited locations in just the three main centres. So, and I was reviewing it for our New Zealand's national radio station last Thursday, and I was giving it quite a good review, and then I realised that there would be a lot of people listening to that show that wouldn't be able to see it.
Yeah. Hey, look, this, I think they will look at the figures in a week or two and then make some decisions like that. I mean, I couldn't say either way that they will go any wider. I mean, it is quite specialised.
It was going to be only 2 weeks as well. Are they looking at extending in the centres where it is playing?
It'll have to be discussed and see if it can be extended. Right. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that that's the sort of product that you can actually sit there at, you know, 7:30 on a Sunday night forever and a day, and people will tick along and see it because it is really, really good. And it's very specialised, isn't it?
It takes up two sessions.
It's short films, you know. So there are risks, but I think from what I can tell, I think it's really worked. It's worked in the main centres.
Great. I've just got a little bit to add in terms of news from the international box office, and that is that Disney's Planes, which we reviewed here in our school holiday special a few weeks ago, which was going to be straight to DVD, has made $89.6 million in the domestic market, which is more than The Lone Ranger made. And so it's now going to get a sequel. So there will be a Planes.
Yeah, the sequel comes out next year.
Planes 2.
There's already a trailer.
Pearl Harbor Planes?
No, it's
That would be funny.
Fire and Rescue?
Fire and Rescue. Oh, it'll be a fire. And they'll be the ones that drop the water.
Yeah, it looks like they just recut the Planes trailer and added in some smoke and flames.
Yeah, I reckon they should include Lassie.
Talking dog?
Yeah. I reckon, why not?
Okay, well, look, anyway, The Lone Ranger,
saved the plane before. Carry on, Dan.
Like, I didn't mind The Lone Ranger, but it's interesting that really is, when Planes does better than you, then you know that you've really got a turkey. But both from the same studio, so, you know, you win some, you lose some, don't you? All right, time to talk about, I think, possibly the most divisive film that we will have on the show this year.
Do you know what a bolido is? Nope. It's a mechanical device. And it has this small electric motor with this rather incredible compound gear that retrieves a steel cable, battery driven. And the cable is made of some unholy alloy, almost impossible to cut it. And it's in a loop. And you come up behind the guy and you drop it over his head. And you pull the free end of the cable tight and walk away. No one ever even sees you. And pulling the cable activates the motor and the noose starts to tighten, and it continues to tighten until it goes to zero.
Cuts the guy's head off.
Yeah, well, he can.
There's nothing he can do.
No.
That's a clip rather than a bit of the trailer from The Counselor. I thought that was probably going to be a little bit more of emblematic, illustrative of the nutso-ness of this particular film. And Kaylee and I, we watched it
side by side,
at one of those it was a Flix screening, so thanks very much to Flix for spotting us the tickets for it. And we had fairly dissimilar responses to it, did we not? So I'll just give you an idea about what this film was about. Michael Fassbender plays a a lawyer in Texas who is pretty successful at his job, but has overextended himself a little bit and finally feels like he has to take the offer of some illicit, so a partnership in some illicit drug deal or other in order to maintain his lifestyle, shall we say. He's about to marry Penelope Cruz, and that's all going famously well, but things go wrong in the drug deal department, and he finds that nothing he can do is going to make things better. He gets advice from a wonderful Brad Pitt, who's the sort of voice, the voice of God, really, sort of telling him how these things work in the real world. And as we heard in that clip, we've got Javier Bardem as his partner in this particular
with yet another terrible hairdo.
Amazing.
And that's amazing, not terrible. Hairdo. That's awesome.
It was hideous.
I'd love to do that.
Oh, and the combination of his shirts.
Yeah, he's awesome.
So this is a film that's written by Cormac McCarthy, the novelist, his first screenplay that's actually made it to the screen. He wrote the novel that No Country for Old Men was based on. He wrote the novel that The Road was based on. And this is in similar sort of territory to No Country for Old Men, I would say, to give you an idea about the sort of tone of it. Directed by Ridley Scott, who everybody will know. And I'm going to sort of leave it there and then hand over to Kaylee, because you will have strong opinions.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this is one of those films that you need to... I mean, if you've seen the trailer, it is going to be... The tone of the trailer is quite different from the film. Like, the trailer is quite snappy, and it makes it look like more of an action thriller film rather than a slow, simmering, like, literary reference session with some really weird Cameron Diaz stuff in it, which I won't go into, but once you've seen it you can't unsee it, much like Javier Bardem's character says.
Yeah,
a bit too gynecological.
I reckon that the only way you can really argue about this film is to delve into spoiler territory a little bit. I think we won't give too much of the detail away, but this is a film that has been sold as if it's like Ocean's 11, right? This is a collection of movie stars getting involved in some wacky crimes, and
but it's not wacky, it's actually terrible.
Bad things, very, very bad things happen in this film, and it is dark. McCarthy, as we know from his other works on screen, takes a pretty dim view of humanity. And there's nothing in this film, like, he basically thinks that we're all rotten, we're all venal, we're all greedy, we're all shallow.
And we all get what we deserve.
And we all get what we deserve, and no matter how pure our intentions might be, when we make bad decisions, there is no coming back from them, and we have to live with the responsibility for our actions, you know. And I think, you know, I was having a conversation with Sam and Andrew of Coffee the other day about this, and, you know, I was making my case for The Counselor, and that is that we watch so many films that follow the same pattern over and over again, which is that hero has this wonderful life, he makes a bad decision, he loses it, but he learns in the process, and he restores, there's some redemption for either for him, or he gets everything back that he loses because he improves his life or what have you. Well, there's no redemption in this film, you know. It's narratively, it's completely unsatisfying. I would imagine if you went into this film expecting a sort of Ocean's caper film, or even a standard Hollywood narrative, you're going to walk out really, really unsatisfied, because it doesn't feed our need for that transformation. But it's much more close to actual real bloody life, and I really appreciated the philosophic and spiritual kind of core of the film, and McCarthy's, you know, I don't take it as dim a view of humanity as he does, but he's basically saying that if we're going to just fill our houses with expensive toys and not tend to our souls, then this is what we can expect, basically. And I don't have a problem with that message at all. the problem I have with the film, because the film has a legion of faults, you know, it's far from a faultless thing. The problem is that Ridley Scott doesn't believe in the same things that Cormac McCarthy believes in. In fact, Ridley Scott is kind of in love with all of the things that McCarthy hates. And so there's a kind of tension going on here in that, like, Scott's fetishizing all of the, you know, like the motorcycle on a pedestal at the in Bardem's bar, and all of the thousands of dollars worth of stereo equipment, or the artworks, or the pool, or the cheetahs.
The cheetahs and what's her name?
The one Cameron Diaz.
No, the not Cameron Diaz one. Penelope Cruz.
Yeah,
those were my favorite characters. That was that's the problem I also had with it. I didn't actually like any of the characters.
Well, but they're not likable, and you know, I don't think you need to like characters. You just need to appreciate them, I think.
Right. I couldn't get into the story because I was like, you're a bit of a dick.
Yeah.
Especially Michael Fassbender. I really didn't like his character.
Right. Well, but it wasn't interesting. It's like the first time I think I've seen him smile in films, and he's got a really goofy smile. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, that's really interesting. Anyway, I thought Brad Pitt was really good in this. Look, it's got so many faults, and it goes too far, too often, to be really worthy of McCarthy's sort of art. But I'm really fond of this film, and it's one of those ones that I think I wouldn't mind watching again. And I really admired its attempt to be something different, you know, to just show us something different, or take a different attitude to things. And and actually even the clash between Scott's aesthetic and McCarthy's sort of ascetic spiritual sense is really interesting, you know. And it fails on lots of levels, but you know, it's not hateful by any means. So that's my sort of position on it.
So is it similar to No Country for Old Men, in the sense that terrible things happen to good people if they make
bad decisions?
Yeah,
exactly. And that's right. The moment, you know, you give into greed, you give into greed, and what it does is it starts. Sorry, that was my phone vibrating. I'll put it in my pocket. If you give into greed, you start down a road that you can't go back from. No Country for Old Men, at the very least, has one good character, which is Tommy Lee Jones's sheriff.
Yeah.
You know, who at the end of it realizes that even he can't hold back the tide of evil. Whereas actually, there's nobody in the counselor that takes that kind of judgmental role. They're all as bad as each other. In fact, they're all bad. Some are worse.
So that makes it a harder film, in the sense that there's no sort of redeeming light at all. I mean, films like that are hard, aren't they? Because there's just nobody there
really
to sort of enjoy or take a side with.
Exactly. And no one you wouldn't want, as an audience member, to think that you were seeing that you were being represented by any of these people. Or at least in No Country for Old Men, Tommy Lee Jones's character was the sort of eyes on it, that you saw everything through, and you could say, well, okay, this is how I would be above this sort of thing. But no, we're all complicit in all of the badness, and there is an enormous amount of badness that goes on in The Counselor. Some amazing scenes, some amazing moments, and some amazing lapses of taste all the way through it. But I don't know, I hope I'm making a case that it's worth your time and worth a look anyway. And you're not gonna, you don't want, you're unconvinced across the table.
You got your two words lined up?
Yep, I got my two words. My two words for The counselor are cinema bolito.
Nice. And rewind this program to remind yourself what a bolito is. My two words for this are best bad, which is a sort of homage to the old 48 hours best worst film prize that we used to give out. But yeah, it really is. It's one of those ones that, you know, I really quite liked it. I certainly enjoyed it. Anyway, we're going in a very, very different direction now. We're going to Kashmir. And I feel fairly confident here that I can talk over this trailer because there's no dialogue, just music on the trailer for Valley of Saints. And we're going to take a slightly different approach to a review of this particular film. Opens in selected centres tomorrow in around New Zealand. But this is actually a film, Simon, that you've got a little bit of a stake in, haven't you? This would be the you're actually the New Zealand distributor for this film.
Yeah, I've grabbed it, bought it, given it a life, I guess, post festival. I mean, it played in the International Film Festival, so and I guess it's a film that, you know, it's quite likely it wouldn't have got a theatrical release after that, but I just I came across it before it played in the film festival, and I quite liked it. Yeah, so took a punt.
Right, so we're not going to ask you to review it because
you give it what it's worth.
Yeah, man. but I am interested in that this is a new endeavour for you, and you know what do you think about this particular film you thought would appeal to audiences in New Zealand?
I just thought it appealed to me, and I just hope that there are some people out there that it might appeal to as well. But I just liked it for its subtlety, for it being a sort of interesting part of the world which I hadn't seen before. I've always enjoyed films like, you know, from, say, Iran or somewhere exotic like Kashmir. So I think those sorts of films are fresh quite often. You know, they tend to often just play in the film festivals
and disappear.
And I thought, well, hey, this one, we've got a little bit of room coming up. We'll give it a nudge and see if we can take it a little bit wider. No. I mean, I have to say it has opened in Auckland already. It opened about a week or so ago, and it opens in Wellington tomorrow in Christchurch.
Right. This is a film about two friends in present-day Kashmir. And first and foremost, I didn't really know very much about Kashmir. All I knew was the political situation there, which is that it's a disputed territory between India and Pakistan, that it's basically under martial law most of the time, that there's a push for sort of independence, or at least free determination by the people there. But that was really all I knew, and I had sort of imagined that it was a kind of mountainous, like Nepal, you know, that it was mountain passes and snow, and but this film paints a very different picture of the place. This is set around a beautiful lake in a valley, and
which you know, people live on it, don't they? Like, they actually have houses
houseboats.
This lake.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite amazing.
It is, and it's beautiful. And these two guys, best friends, have decided that they need to get out. That there's no future for them in terms of the building lives for each other in Kashmir as it stands. They've saved enough money to be able to get a bus to New Delhi, where in the big city, you know, they might be able to make their fortune. And what happens is that just as they're about to get on the bus to leave, the curfew comes down, and martial law is basically declared, and there are no buses in or out, no shops opening. They're stuck where they are. They find lodging at one of these houseboats, and they find that they're sharing this houseboat with a young Kashmiri woman who is a scientist who's studying the lake and studying the water quality of the lake. And one of the lads gets quite fond of her and starts to question whether he has a future in New Delhi with millions and millions of other people, or whether perhaps he should stick around and build a life for himself where he grew up. And you know what? I saw a film which we're not going to review here, but I'll just mention in passing on Sunday night, called Inshallah, which is about Palestine and the Israeli occupation and the wall and the suicide bombers and the martyrdom and all the rest of it. And it really is. It's a very heavy-handed it's full of lessons. It's telling us how things should be and what's so wrong with this whole situation. And it's everybody, every conversation in the entire film is infused with the politics of the situation. Nobody talks about their lives. You know, you don't even really see people just getting on with their lives. It's all, you know, if you see people working, they're picking rubbish out of a rubbish dump to try and eke out an existence. And it's just so heavy-handed that it was awful. It was miserable to watch. Just a couple of days later, I saw Valley of Saints, which was about a place that has similar problems, and yet the problems weren't the reason for the film, or the problems weren't the core of the film. This was about human beings and relationships and interesting motivations, and there's this subtle background of the politics of the situation. There's a subtle background of the environmental problems around the lake, and they just inform a story that's already going on rather than being the reason for it. And you know what? I just really appreciated the fact that I wasn't being told what to think all the time through this film. I thought there was a really lovely, subtle and very inexpensive film to make, you know, just a very small crew, high definition photography. But I loved the fact that in one shot it would have the majesty of the landscape and the mountains and the lake, and then the next shot would be all the rubbish and the sewage that's just being poured into it through the sewers. And you know, he's got a great eye, the director of this film. He's got a fantastic eye, and there's some lovely moments that I actually paused the film quite a lot. I watched it on a screener that you lent me, and I actually paused it quite a lot when I was watching at home, and just saying, look, have a look at that. You know, that's just, I don't often do that with screeners these days. Usually you want to get rid of them as fast as possible. So look, I was really, really taken with this film, and it helped, I think, that I had interviewed the director for this show back during the festival. And this, we may repost that, actually, Kaylee, with your help tomorrow. It's just a short sort of 15-minute interview with the director. And it will help give you a sense of what he was wanting to achieve with it. And look, this is a film. We were talking earlier on about stars and star ratings. And normally I wouldn't worry about it. But I reckon that this is a 4. Out of 5, definitely, and maybe even a little bit higher. It was a real surprise, and a really pleasant surprise as well. There you go. You are allowed to speak.
No, I just don't know what to say. That's great. I mean, yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Not just blowing smoke here.
Yeah, but you only knocked it off recently, didn't you? Which is good.
Well, I mean, this is the thing.
It's hard. I mean, I watched
it. It's embarrassing, actually, to admit that you've had the screener for months.
Yeah.
That's where it went. That's why I haven't seen it. It's like I was thinking yesterday, I was like, oh, because I got sick halfway through the festival, I was like, it's now I'm feeling the effects of missing all those films. I'm like, ah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll make sure I bring it back, because it is definitely definitely worth your time. And yeah, it'll show you a part of the world that you haven't seen before, and it'll show you the way people live in a way that you haven't seen before. And it's a really sweet story, really well told. You know, this is a terrific little film. It won the Audience Award at Sundance, I think.
That's right.
I mean, we knew that it pushed some positive buttons for
and
people.
It's only got one paid actor in it, and that's the woman in it. The other two are just picked up locally.
Right.
Yeah, so it's one of those. Yeah. I'm glad you really enjoyed it, and I just hope it, you know, we can spread the word a bit and people can share in its glory.
Yeah, well, and I guess I got one more question, and feel free to tell me to mind my own beeswax here, but you know, I'm interested in the economics of something like this. And you know, have you mortgaged your house for this? Have you gone out on a limb? I don't think people realize how the economy of film distribution works, you know?
Yeah, look, it's a marginal call as to whether or not you'll recoup on this. So it is increasing. I think I just have this feeling that increasingly smaller niche films are finding it harder to get away than, say, 5-10 years ago. Whereas, I think a film like this would have been a lot easier to sort of get people enthusiastic about some time ago.
In a world where we maybe had 3 or 4 films opening a week, it would be easier to get some attention for it. But now we're at 5 or 6.
Exactly. Yeah. There's just so much content flying around. The thing I enjoyed about that was the freshness of it, the subtlety of it. And there are some nice kind of, you know, sort of messages that flow through the film which aren't banging you on the head, and you know, for me it's about, you know, it shows how you can contribute and how you can contribute in small ways. It's a charming film,
yeah, and about homeland and all sorts of, yeah, just some really, really nice stuff. My two words for Valley of Saints are I guess New World. It's time for some news.
Well, I'm going to throw it to Simon, because we have an added news piece. Simon.
I can't remember the website, can you? I just know, what's it called again?
We're so well prepared here.
There's a film festival opening, isn't there?
Yes.
As of tonight.
Yes. You know,
at playing at Lighthouse Cuba, Lighthouse Petone, mm-hmm.
and
Lighthouse.
And other locations around New Zealand.
And other locations around New Zealand. It's a travelling road show.
Aotearoa Adventure Film Festival, did I pronounce that right?
The Aotearoa Adventure Film Festival is coming to town.
Yeah.
And we're quite excited about that. Yeah, lots of mountain biking and things like that, mm-hmm. which are a bit of fun.
So is this a competitor to one to the famous one, which is the Banff Mountain Film Festival, which we used
know.
To?
Does Banff still come here?
It does like one night only at the Paramount usually in Wellington, and where they can get the sort of capacity, and it was like 20-minute, like nothing longer than 25 minutes, and just a collection of, you know, people skiing down mountains and people climbing mountains and riding mountain bikes.
It's pretty much all they do in Banff.
Right.
Yeah, I remember. I went to Banff. I stayed there 3 months.
You did? Yes, I remember. You told me the story.
Magnificent.
Isn't that where you met your wife?
It is. Mm. Yes.
Oh, look, we're getting some lovely stories
out of
it.
Isn't that great? Went ice skating together on a car park. They just sprayed it with water and then you went ice skating on it. Stuff like that.
That's
so romantic, isn't it? That's romance until you hit the floor. It's not real.
Until it's February and Banff and your eyelashes freeze together.
The Aotearoa Adventure Film Festival, what sort of stuff is in it?
There are 4 films in total, I believe.
Yeah.
There's 2 water-themed ones, and there's 2 trail-themed bike riding ones.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
All right. And people in the rest of the country are going to be able to experience this?
It's played in Rotorua, it's played in Tauranga, or I think it is down to, and then it's Wellington, and it just keeps on going, doesn't
it? Going to Dunedin as well.
Okay, look out for it.
Mm.
So check it out. It's a bit of fun. If you're into the outdoor stuff,
and talking of film festivals, I saw a poster up at one of our local cinemas here in Wellington for the South African Film Festival, which I hadn't heard about before. And that's an initiative by the South African consulate, who are bringing the films out. The tickets for that are free, so worth looking out for if you interested in the commercial cinema from.
That'd be fascinating, wouldn't it? Because when's the last time you saw a film from South Africa? Locally made, not about South Africa.
No, that's right. Well, there was a terrible one with John Cleese as a school teacher.
Oh, that's right.
That was a truly, truly awful film. Mm. So I'm hoping that
Isn't that one where that giant wave came in, like a South African co-production? Remember, they're all stuck in that shopping, in that grocery store.
That was Australian.
The shark one.
I think it might have been Australia, South Africa.
Really? Might have had some South African money, but yeah.
They shall redeem themselves.
Yeah, exactly. So
we have high hopes.
Tweet us if you get to see any of those South African Film Festival films and let us know, because we should be making recommendations if they're good.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. So, on with the news. More news. A study in the U.S. has shown that PG-13 movies are now more violent than those that are rated R. The study by Ohio State University and the University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg Public Policy Center analyzed the top 30 grossing films from 1950 to 2012, which is over 900 films, and found that gun violence has more than doubled in films in that period, with PG-13 films showing a remarkable tripling in violence, now more than those rated R. And if you have watched that documentary on the MPAA, you know it's not about violence at all. It's about sexual content, so that's not really surprising.
And the big news, the moment is the Weinsteins, Harvey Weinstein, starting a big campaign to try and get a better rating for Philomena.
Yeah, Judi Dench is front and center as M.
As her Bond character, because Philomena has been rated R in the US because of 2 swear words. You're allowed 1. And it's got 2 curse words in it. And so Weinstein he's tried to fight this battle before, but he is absolutely on the warpath, because Philomena, you've seen it, Si.
I haven't, and he's right. It's a strong film, but it's not full of foul language or anything. It's so tame.
Yeah, and this is the thing, is that in the US, those ratings make a huge difference to the cinemas that you can go into, to the newspapers that will take your advertising. An R rating, this is why PG-13 has become so important. And in order to get a PG-13 rating, you know, there's no blood, you're allowed one piece of foul language, one. You've got to choose your moment carefully. And, you know, the distortions that system has imposed on Hollywood and on the films that we get to watch. You know, I wonder to what extent with all the films we've watched are different to the ones that their creators would have intended.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's so skewed, because there are so many films with slash and hack violence, but without blood. You know, or sort of young woman doing crazy stuff, you know, I mean, or just, you know, sexual content quite often. I mean, I think of Pitch Perfect and you know, a lot of kids seeing that when you look at it, it's actually quite adult in places.
Well,
And you go, well, how does this work? Right. Two swear words in a film. It seems like the focus is all wrong. Because it is a film that has a great message and is a true story and all those sorts of things, and it
should be going as wide as getting out to as many people as possible. So yes, the whole ratings situation, but also interestingly enough that, you know, in the US it's not a legal framework. It's an industry body that sets those ratings, and you might have a film that's rated R. There's no actual legal prevention from. It's just that cinemas don't do it because they'll get picketed and boycotted. Blue is the Warmest Colour, which is the big Cannes winner, is currently playing in New York City at a couple of locations. That's been rated NC-17, which was the rating that was introduced to replace the X, because the X got hijacked by the porn people. So they needed something else that was higher than an R. They invented this NC-17, and there's a cinema in New York that has made a point of saying, we will let teenagers in because we don't agree with this rating. And A.O. Scott from the New York Times wrote an article about how he has teenage daughters, and he would be perfectly, you know, he encouraged them to go basically because he thought that they should see this film. There's a lot of pressure going on the ratings situation in the States, because it just does appear that it doesn't serve films.
Yep. I share your rage.
Right. Meanwhile, four cinemas in Sweden have decided to experiment with a new rating system, one based on the famous Bechdel test, a very rough indicator of a film's feminist credentials. To pass the Bechdel test, named after author-artist Alison Bechdel, the following criteria must be met. Are there at least two female characters with names? Do these characters have a conversation about something other than a man? Are there strong female presences in the film? And the four Swedish cinemas who are participating have committed to only screening films with an A rating.
See, I thought this was a really great idea when I thought that it was just labelling. Mm. You know, like, I think it's actually a really, it's a really rough guide. There are lots of great films. There are lots of feminist films that don't pass the Bechdel test. I mean, Gravity doesn't, for a start. But the idea of just, you know, putting a label on it, giving people an idea that this stuff is important, I think that's totally fair enough. But not playing the ones that don't, I think that's a bridge too far, I reckon. But interesting development nonetheless.
I can't imagine there'd be many films that are in release right now that actually get played, unfortunately. Like, what are they screening? So I'm going to plan my trip to Sweden. Finally, it isn't very often that cinema news makes it into the National Business Review, but the news that local multiplex owner Hoyts had announced a doubling of their annual profit to over $10 million made headlines last week. The company says that the sale of Hoyts Distribution for a one-off profit of $2.7 million and the completion of the transition to digital at all their locations is mainly responsible for the result. People on Facebook think otherwise.
Yeah, well, that's right. And I have to say that there were several really frustrating responses to that news, and one that really got up my nose was the people who were saying, well, obviously the movie business is in perfectly fine health. Piracy isn't a problem. What do you, you know, stop cinema owners, stop whining about people downloading because it's obviously not hurting your business. Well, actually, how much better could the business be if people weren't pirating?
Oh, heck, I mean, pirating is a huge problem. enormous. Yeah, anyone who creates something and then puts it out there, you know, any type of whatever, music, you know, film, whatever, like images, you know, they should be entitled to their piece. You know, I think. I mean, I think, you know, it's just so hard on people who make the product. So anyway, I mean,
right.
It's got to stop. I don't know how. It's got to stop.
That's our news. That's our news for.
What about we had a power cut yesterday?
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. One more piece of news.
Yeah, that was massive, wasn't it? Actually, we lost the projector, Dan. We had to replace one.
Speaking of damaging the cinema industry, yeah. Way to go, Transpower.
That's right. Thanks very much.
So, can you explain what happened?
I thought the propeller might have moved in the Cook Strait or something and taken out the cable. Well, yeah, we're sitting here, and then bang, everything went out. Right, and what, it was Wellington, all throughout the North Island, wasn't it? It was in different places.
Not all throughout the North Island, but there was a chunk of
the Shortland Street studio. The Shortland Street studio went out. I heard about that, which is weird.
Good thing.
But Newtown, where I was, fine.
Yeah. And I think it was at the Haywards power station where they were doing. They were running some tests. Well, thank you very much.
Someone heard a large bang.
Yeah, and I must say, like, we lost the projector as a result of that.
Yep.
Big thanks to NEC for getting us a projector in like 2 hours.
Oh, you actually the died. It didn't just like require.
It didn't want to
rebooting or
it didn't want to play nice. It was like nope, I'm not taking that.
It meshed the power supply, and we've got a UPS there that's there to protect it.
I was going to say, where's your surge protector?
Yeah, no, we had our surge protector.
Yeah.
So
one of the projectors kept going, but there's no sound.
Yeah, that was
the projector's on the UPS, but I guess the sound processor isn't. So.
Yeah, and then it kind of conked out, didn't it? After a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but it's a hard life.
It is a hard life. You got to. Well, we had 100 people coming in for a private hire that night. I was like, no. So anyway, we got there, got it sorted.
Right.
But
that's the news. Time to introduce our a special guest. We've been joined here in the Cinematica studio by Blair, who is you have just been to an exotic location, haven't you, for a film festival. So tell us a little bit about where you've been and why you were there.
I have indeed. Hello. I've been to just come back from Abu Dhabi for the Abu Dhabi Film Festival. I was there sitting in a darkened room for about 10 hours a day projecting movies.
Yeah, and so what do you know about this isn't your first trip to Abu Dhabi, right?
This is my third time.
Right, and how old is the festival? Is it one of those, is it a relatively young, fresh sort of festival?
Is it, maybe it's like its seventh year or something, I think, yeah.
Right, and how is it that a Kiwi projectionist / operations manager for a cinema gets flown around the world to Abu Dhabi? How did they find out about you?
Friends in the right places.
Right. And yeah. So how long was the festival? How long did the festival last? And what sort of films were they playing?
It's a 10-day festival, and it's a competition festival. So they have three main categories and then some Emirati film competition categories as well. And there's a mixture of Western and Arab films.
Si, you're looking at the program there. That's a healthy booklet, isn't it?
There's a heck of a lot of product here, and it's a lovely book. It's a really nice book. Yeah, and it's interesting because it is, isn't it? It's a lot of films here that we've probably seen.
Yeah, I noticed a few this year that we had in the New Zealand Film Festival earlier.
Like,
so
yeah, like Broken Circle Breakdown and Camille Claudel and things like that. But then there's a heck of a lot of really interesting you know, films from Iran and in the Middle East.
In terms of its region, do all of the Emirates have their own film festivals, or is this like the preeminent one that sort of looks after all of the?
There's one in Dubai as well, which runs a little bit earlier. I think they're looking at splitting that into actually two separate film festivals next year.
They're spawning.
Apparently, one like a one that's focused on kids. A children's film festival and stuff,
right.
And there is one probably running now in Doha.
Wow!
Yeah,
I had no idea. So your role was, projecting films, and in this new digital world that we're in, that it doesn't mean sitting there watching film run through a projector. What was your responsibility there? Ingesting, I guess.
I guess, yeah, making sure that you've got your content on your server for the next day or two. That's made trickier by the fact that the main venue is a multiplex, and we borrow 6 screens of 9 from the multiplex. But they also, when we finish at sort of 11:30 midnight, they'll whack on a screening at 12:30 sort of thing. And then they also have screenings in the morning before we show up. So it's trying to mix, you know, make sure all their content's on our servers as well as their stuff's still on theirs and right. for them as well. So
okay, so 10 hours a day in a darkened room watching basically computers go brrr. What do you do in the spare time? Must have been some spare time. Did you get to see the sites? Are there sites?
Yeah, there are sites. We didn't do so much sightseeing this year. It's the same kind of group of projectionists that have been since I was going 2 years ago. And we saw the sites last year, you know. So.
But it's crazy, isn't it? Because you actually have a subtitle process going on for a lot of the films, don't you? So there's an actual... very, very soon before the film's play, don't you? So you've got to check that as well. Is that right?
That's handled by another company. So yeah. There is a company which comes in and they have received copies, screeners or whatnot of the movies beforehand, transcribed them to Arabic, and then actually written special subtitle files, and they project those for all the English language or foreign language movies, non-Arabic. They'll actually... project those onto a board underneath the screen.
Okay, so even though they've created a subtitle file, they don't incorporate it into the DCP. That
no, and I mean we've talked to the guy who runs it whether or not they will do that, and he's not sure. Well, at the moment,
I think he's got a job already, isn't he?
There is that as well as you know if it's an English movie and it's got a French movie or whatnot, and it has English subtitles already. You know, say you've got two lines of English subtitles and then you drop in Arabic subtitles underneath that, you've got, all of a sudden you've got four lines worth of subtitles there and not much room left for picture.
Now, in Abu Dhabi, they are quite conservative, and I have heard tale of the films having to be edited for their audiences. Now, that's easy to do with film because you just kind of cut out chunks of it. How do you guys deal with DCP, and did you have to do any live editing at all?
This year, actually, I was surprised there wasn't any, and there were a few things that I heard of and a couple that I saw. Actually, I thought, crikey, I'm sure they would have censored that in previous years. So whether or not they're becoming, you know, less strict on that stuff now, I'm not sure.
I don't see blue as the warmest color here.
No, but Broken Circle Breakdown has some frank sex scenes in it.
Okay, as far as I'm aware, that was not edited at all. So
wow.
Well, looking forward to Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac in the festival next year, the full five-hour director's cut.
Yeah, but it's also, logistically, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's so hot. Like, there's one theatre in particular where the sheet just drives straight into the knee or something like this.
That wasn't a venue this year. In previous years, they've had that. It's called the Abu Dhabi Theatre, which is at the end of a breakwater, essentially. And it was designed and built with a road through the middle of the front row of the cinema, so a sheikh could come by in his car, hop out in the front row, sit in his seat, and then once the movie's played, he car drives back through and he jumps in and off he goes.
Nice. I thought there'd be more for security rather than comfort.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's pretty extreme.
Can you imagine being dropped off at your seat in the cinema?
That'd be amazing.
By limo.
That's pretty good for disabled access too.
Were there any celebrities in attendance at this festival?
Yeah,
because they often try and sort of drag a few people out, don't they?
On the opening night, Forrest Whitaker was there because they gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Just so happens to have the butler. Was the butler playing in the
festival?
No,
he wasn't in any film screening this year at the festival, so... And I did hear that David Hasselhoff was there on the closing night because he was over for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, which happened a day after the festival finished. So,
right.
Which you did. You didn't hang around for that, did you? You just came straight home.
Yeah.
And Kaylee, this is a festival that you, on the show in weeks past, you've suggested that you are going to try and get to work on in future. Is everything you've heard from Blair here still, you know, you're still keen to...
Yeah, it would be a bit different because I think I would be applying to work in the press department or in the sort of talent management area. So But, you know, my only festival experience thus far was working at the New Zealand Film Festival in 2010, so I imagine it'll be quite different.
Yeah. So. Just for listeners who are interested in working on film festivals or any festivals, actually, there are a number of websites that are where festivals put their available jobs, they list them, they have job descriptions and contact details and what have you. And I do know quite a few people that just travel the world going from festival to festival.
It's like Without
getting
a Box,
more and more.
But for jobs, so it should be called Without a Job, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, half the staff seemingly at Abu Dhabi seem to be Canadians.
TIFF.
From TIFF. Because when they wanted to start the festival there, they kind of looked around and said, what's the best festival? Film festival in the world, and everyone said TIFF, so they went there and headhunted everyone, I think.
Great stuff. Blair, thanks very much for being on Cinematica. It's a really good window on an interesting world.
No worries, my pleasure.
Cool. And do you want to hang around and talk about The Butler?
Sure, I haven't seen it, but why not?
You can tell us about the credits. The credits are great.
I haven't seen it either, so it's two of us.
Like, I have to say, that hasn't stopped anybody in the past.
Are you political, Mr. Gaines?
No, sir.
We have no tolerance for politics at the White House.
I'm Cecil Gaines. I'm the new butler.
You hear nothing, you see nothing. You only serve.
You know he got that job himself. The White House called him. He didn't call the White House.
I want to hear all the stories.
I don't know how many stories you're going to hear, because they done swore him to some kind of secret code. I'm so proud of you.
Did you go to an all-colored school, Cecil?
I didn't go to school, Miss President. I grew up on a cotton farm.
Get back to work.
Don't you lose your temper with that man. It's his world. We just living in it.
Forest Whitaker and a cast of luminaries.
Except for Mariah Carey.
Hey.
She didn't have many lines.
Look, I won't hear a bad word about Mariah Carey, because you've seen Precious, right? Hands up, everybody who's seen Precious.
Yeah, I've seen Precious.
She's great. She's really, really good.
She
in
was
Precious.
Good in that, actually.
Yeah. So look,
Kravitz was in that too, wasn't he?
Sorry,
wasn't Lenny Kravitz in Precious?
Yeah, he was, yeah, and he's in The Butler too. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, he's got an Oprah connection, has he? Some say it's not like, you know, it's like the Rainbow Collection. It's the Oprah.
Yeah.
Well, it is pretty much whatever Oprah wants, Oprah gets in this world. You know, we're talking about, you know, it's Oprah's.
Here I am, Oprah.
It's Oprah's world. We're just living in it, right? And and she's fantastic.
She's like Mum off Futurama.
Stop it. Stop it. Sometimes when you haven't seen a film, you're really annoying. So, can we talk about the subject at the hand?
Yes.
And, Kaylee, you've just seen The Butler.
Yes.
Also known as Lee Daniels' The Butler.
Yep.
And
not The Help, as some people might ask for it. That's a different film.
So, what do you reckon?
Well, first of all, go see it. That's what I have to say. So, directed by Lee Daniels, as we said, the director of Precious, featuring an incredible cast, and it's based on the life of Eugene Allen, and the story follows him from youth working on cotton farms to the top rank of butlers at the White House. And during his tenure, Gaines witnesses the dramatic changes that swept American society from the civil rights movement to Vietnam. All the way to Barack Obama being elected, which at that point in the film, I just lost it. I could not stop crying.
It was
incredible.
It's a masterpiece of a tearjerker. Like, in terms of being actually manipulated to produce, like, really genuine, warm emotions. I don't think I've seen a film this year that's actually pushed all those buttons so efficiently and so effectively. Mm. It really does. It just works. And but it is manipulative. It's designed to wring as many tears out of you as possible, and it's also, I think, a really helpful history lesson. I think there's a lot of generation of young watchers that probably may have an inkling about what America used to be like during the civil rights era and before, but this film makes it really, really clear how far America has come and perhaps how far it still has to go. But, you know, it's entertaining as well, isn't it? You know, like the balance between the what's going on at the big house, the White House, with what's going on in his home life and Oprah. You know, why isn't Oprah acted more? She's fantastic.
I think she's so rich, she doesn't have to do anything.
She doesn't have to do anything, she doesn't want to.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, you know, I think it's our loss, really. And what did you make of Forrest Whitaker?
I don't even have words. So good. He's just so lovely. Like, you just want to hug him all the time. You're like, Forrest Whitaker, you're great. So nice. And the thing that I found most surprising about this film is it was written by Danny Strong, who I know best from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right. Didn't know that.
Yeah, and other, like, sort of nerdy roles, and sort of the Joss Whedon universe. So I was quite surprised that he had written this, like, really incredible, like, American Black History film, really.
And it's got some entertainment value, but it's also there's some heavy stuff going on at the beginning there. I mean, the film opens on a lynching, you know, or on the result of a lynching. That's the opening shot, so you know that it's not going to be, you know, all beer and skittles, is it? And now we've got there are a lot of cameos in this, a lot of celebrity or you know, high profile actors. Robin Williams is in it, and we've got Alan Rickman playing.
Alan Rickman was
playing
brilliant.
Ronald Reagan.
Oh, that was a surprise. I didn't
really good. Really nice to see him not play Alan Rickman.
Probably best Reagan I've seen in cinema.
Yeah, and Jane Fonda as Nancy Reagan. So there's there's some really, really good people in it. And look, it's a pretty easy film to recommend. I went to a preview screening of this where it was put on for exhibitors, and some unnamed theatre people came out afterwards, and, you know, they'd obviously really enjoyed it, but they were going, oh, I don't know if there's any money in it, I don't know how many sessions we're going to give, I don't know, you know. And it's like, really? Sometimes you should just program things because they're important and they're good. Sort of made me mad that they would be second guessing somehow what audiences would get a kick out of.
And watching some American films here, like, I've watched some and I've said on the show that it just seemed really American and might not people might not connect with it, but this feels more universal. I mean, it is American history that I know because I learned it.
Yeah.
But I think it does have a more sort of universal appeal than other films.
Well, I would hope. I have this horrible feeling that there's a sense in the industry that that films with basically black subject matter don't play in New Zealand as strong as they would as they would domestically, and you know, I hope that people are proved wrong on this one, because, you know, it's a great film, I reckon. Mm. Really good.
Big Oscar bait as well.
Oh, yeah.
That we've heard for a long time.
Exactly. Whether it will actually survive all of the competition that's coming through over the next few months will remain to be seen. But, you know, I hope it does some business, because certainly, you know, there's a lot of pleasures to be had.
Well, we'll be doing an Oscar wrap-up. But, yeah, before Christmas or after, guys?
Probably a little bit closer to, because a lot of our Oscar stuff happens after Christmas.
You need to be able to see it.
But I'm already starting to prepare the ground for our end-of-year special, because there are various people that we want to get back on the show. I'm going to try and get Glenn Kenny in New York back on the show. Reese Pye, who's going to become our our England correspondent,
be good UK. To find
UK correspondent.
A geezer.
see whether she's got something to contribute. So we're going to try and get as far around the world as possible with our end of year special. So if I've just mentioned your name, start preparing now, because I'm going to be coming for you.
We're going to ask you for your top five.
And we will be
and
running
some two-word reviews.
And we'll be running our annual survey, won't we? I think we did it last year, and we'll run it again this year for the Oscar noms.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. Exactly.
It's good fun.
All of that stuff. So, yeah, start thinking, everybody, about how that's all going to play out. Two words for the butler.
My two words for the butler are power play.
Right, my two words for the butler are history lesson. Now, that is our show for this week. Next week on the show, Jackass presents Bad Grandpa. I'm sure we're all hanging out for that. Boys Don't Cry's Kimberly Pierce remakes the horror classic Carrie. And Benedict Cumberbatch is Julian Assange in The Fifth Estate, and all that and more.
Have you seen that little thing about Carrie in the like social media, where there's people in a cafe just having a drink and things start moving, and it's that woman? It's quite fun. It's
they did a publicity stunt.
I don't spend any time
on
social
media. It's a publicity stunt. I just on people. Well, I don't either, but, you know, just thought I'd throw that
I don't squander my time on social media.
Oh, please.
All of that and
is a tweet a review, Dan? Is a tweet a review?
Heck no.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to click subscribe in iTunes or your own favourite podcasting software so the latest episode is always downloaded automatically. You can leave us feedback at the iTunes store. Those ratings, those reviews, they help push us up the ladder and help more people discover the show. Another big month, October, was our biggest month of our cinematic life so far. How can people contact us with their feedback?
Many ways. They can find us on Twitter via @CinematicaCast, on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast. You can find our two-word reviews on Letterboxd. We are there as Cinematica, or on our website at cinematica.co.nz.
The show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music is 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can buy that at the iTunes store. And we're going to leave you with some more music. This got sneaked out early this morning to coincide with the first great reviews for The Hunger Games Catching Fire. It's Kiwi sensation Lorde's version of Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. They've only released 90 seconds of it, and you can't buy it yet, unfortunately. So you'll have to put up with this 90-second extract. Until next week, that's all from me.
Goodbye from me.
All from me.
And thanks very much, Blair, for your time.
Thank you.
And your contribution to the Butler Review.
Yeah,
excellent.
And, you know, being our technical guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just sitting here quietly for the last part of that, yeah.
Good work.
Awesome. See ya. The world.